The date today is July the 9th, and I'm welcoming Marion Cashin, who lived in this neighborhood approximately from the age of 7 until 21, and that would have been from 1943 until 1957. Okay. So, Marion, thank you very, very much for being here with me. Would you start off, please, by just telling me where you lived, how many different houses, and where those houses were in our Harbor Village?
Well, I lived on Bradford Avenue, 188, across from the synagogue. And next door to us was a family that were Holocaust survivors that came in. And then there was, further south, there was the Lieberman family. And then there was Tenenbaum's Poultry. Now, that was very debatable, this poultry, because they wanted to put a slaughterhouse.
And right on Brunswick.
Right on Brunswick. And my mother had a petition and went to every neighbor and said, no way are we going to have a slaughterhouse. And she was very active with that, and they never got their slaughterhouse, which was lovely, because it was only a few, two or three doors away.
Do you know why she opposed it?
Well, she didn't want to have all the rats and horrible things running around and the smell of a slaughterhouse. That would have been awful, you know.
But your mother was an activist then.
She was really, yes, very involved with any political situation. And so she just took up the cause and she fought it.
And when you said she took up political situations, she was active in other situations?
No, not really.
But that was the one.
She wasn't a homebody, but, you know, if anyone was going to slight her or the family or there's going to be issues, no, she wouldn't sit back. She just like, this is not going to happen for sure.
Yeah. Well, she prevented that slaughterhouse
absolutely
from being in your neighborhood.
They did not get their slaughterhouse. And I, you know, there was lots of money, I'm sure, under the table, but they, no, she said, no way, would you like to live near a slaughterhouse? You know, she went to, at that time, Alderman's, you know. And no, she fought it, tooth and nail, for sure. And they didn't get it.
Well,
yeah. And my father's garage was further south. We were at 188, so, further north. And this was Charlie's Central Garage. And it was a full garage, which is now a parquet. And so it's very interesting because, I mean, he was very respected as a mechanic. And he had so many people from all over the city coming down with their... And every weekend, we would go for a ride in someone's car, usually a very fancy car. So we were always in these remarkable cars, quite frankly. And so we lived up above the garage when we first arrived in Brunswick Avenue until our this little house down the street became available, 188, that is. And it was really quite dangerous up above the garage, knowing that what was going on. There was paint fumes from, you know, spraying and all kinds of things. My mother was really beside herself there. And there was this great big flat roof, and we used to go out as little children playing on this flat roof. I was the eldest one, and walking along the edge. And, you know, and we could have easily dropped into Mrs. Horbachuk's, you know, garden below, but that was quite a drop, you know.
That was two stories, I guess.
Yeah, two full stories. So, you know, my mother used to plant her vegetables on this flat, in this flat area, and she had her planters.
You mean on the roof?
Right on the roof.
On the second floor.
Yes, and then there was this, it wasn't a big apartment, but the rest of it was roof covering the garage,
right.
And it was all tarred, and then there was stones on top of it, you know. And so this was our play area. I hate to say it, but this is where we played. And my sister was just born, actually, and it was my brother and I, so I had to watch him. And I used to be the daredevil, and I'd walk around the edge. It's really quite remarkable when I think about it. However, it was fun, sort of. Rickety old place, you know.
So there were five of you living above the garage then?
Yes, there was. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then my sister was born, and then we moved into 188. And which was a nice little house, you know, and whatever.
Please tell me a little more about the garage.
Oh, the garage?
What happened there? How was it mechanics and
yes,
repairing?
It was everything. What? It was, my father was a mechanic, and he could repair just about any type of car. And then they, you know, used to do some welding, body work, like body shop. So that was sort of in the middle. And then there was a man that used to do all the painting, you know, paint the cars that were repaired or that had, when they had an accident, whatever, you know, whatever happened. So it was a full garage. It went right to the lane, went from the front to the lane.
So it was deep.
Very deep. And in the front area, all the cars, you know, that were waiting to be repaired. And then he'd go over them all and see what was the problem, and then they'd leave their car, whatever. It was the large garage, you know. And that's where I picked up all my mechanical ideas, because I used to weld myself. So
you showed me how to weld. How old were you when you were welding?
No, I welded later on in life. Uh-huh. But I remember him showing me and so on and so forth. And It was a very interesting place. And my father, he was quite tough, you know, quite a tough guy. He liked the Brunswick Hotel, so he'd always go down up to the Brunswick Hotel and come back slightly inebriated, you know. Mm-hmm. But everybody knew Charlie. I mean, there's no
question.
And
Charlie was your dad?
My dad.
And what did he call the garage?
Charlie's Central Garage, yeah.
Yeah.
And what else can I tell you?
Tell me about his relationship with cars.
My father?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, he loved, you know, taking everything apart. He could take things apart, close his eyes, and put them back together. I mean, he was really quite remarkable. And then on, you know, Sunday, we'd go for a drive in someone's car. It would be, it could be a Cadillac, or it could be a, oh my gosh, there was some English cars, I can't even remember. He had a sliding window in between.
From the front to the back?
Yes. I mean, they were really fancy cars, and he dealt with very sort of high-end cars. So it was neat, because we never knew what car we were going in.
But it was always a treat to go in some expensive car that your family could never own.
Oh, of course, it was wonderful, you know. And he loved working on cars. The more difficult, the better. You know, he really enjoyed it.
Do you think that he ever went to a mechanic school?
Oh, he did. When he came as, you know, a youngster, very young, from Russia, mm-hmm. He went at that time. I don't know. It wasn't Ryerson. It was one of the more...
Central Tech.
It wasn't Central Tech. It was like a technical school. But it was in the East End. I mm-hmm. don't know which one it was. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, he took courses, and he was very good. And all the teachers would bring their cars to Charlie, because he knew what it was all about. He really enjoyed it. He was very good with his hands. Very mechanical, because he moved on later on in life to do have an engineering company, and he was welding these huge tanks with all the contents in them, which was unheard of, you know. And my father used to have these huge cranes. I don't know. He's very mechanical. That's all I can say. A character.
When you say he's a character, can you think of some other stories to share with me?
Oh, well, it was the crane business. They were hoisting some huge tank so that he could weld it, and something slipped and the whole damn thing fell. And it was a real issue. Actually, my husband saw the whole thing, so I never did. But he had a big chuckle over the whole, we always brought up Charlie and the crane and so on and so forth. But whatever, he certainly was interesting. But when I became a potter, he was the one that was very instrumental in setting up my studio with, you know, compressors and, you know, spray booths. And my husband has a carpet company, and he set up this air table. He was the one that devised this whole air table that when you were sewing, the carpets flowed up. And he did this years ago before anyone ever heard of this. So he was...
I haven't heard of it yet.
No, but he did. Yeah, he was the one that sort of...
Well, he had a real passion.
He had a passion.
And he pursued it.
Yes, yeah. He understood it for some strange reason. He really did. I mean, education was just the technical school. Mm-hmm. But he was clever that way. There's no question.
Was his business successful?
He did very well. He also had a good eye for land, so he always bought land. The only thing is, unfortunately, he liked to drink. And he liked just, you know, he was good time, Charlie. And so as a result, if it wasn't my mother saving every little penny to make sure everything was paid.
Yeah, he would have wasted it, squandered it.
Yeah, so it, you know, she really had a tough time because she had to really have a grip on everything.
So she had to be the adult.
Oh, absolutely. He was the kid, for sure. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. But whatever. That's what it was all about.
What was... So you grew up here...
Yes.
In the 40s and 50s.
Yeah, yeah.
What was the population that made up this neighborhood during those years?
Well, there was primarily Jewish people. There was the Jackson family that lived up on Brunswick. They were a black family, originally from the Underground Railroad. There was Mrs. Horbachek that was next door. She was a Ukrainian lady, a wonderful gardener. My mother learned so many things from her. It was like her passion, gardening, as is mine. Mm. There was, you know, the Greenspan, they had a butcher shop. Oh my God.
Yeah.
Greenspan butcher
Where
shop
was
at
that?
The corner. They were at the corner of Harbor and Brunswick.
Oh, so very close.
And then across the road, there was a Platt's Grocery. And around the corner from Greenspan was a fish market, a little fish market. And so all these stores are now there's a pottery studio right there at the corner. Yeah. And at the, let's say, going west, I guess, was Willie Martin's butcher shop. And then
right on Harbor.
Uh-huh. And at the corner of Harbor and Brunswick was Brunswick Bakery. There was a bakery there at one time.
A Jewish bakery or other?
Yeah, pretty well, you know. It was like the Harbor Bakery, mm-hmm. very similar. Probably better, actually, but they... whatever. What else can I tell you?
There were a lot of small stores there.
Oh, yeah, there was. You know, on each corner there was a little store servicing the community. And I believe, yes, the laundry... There was a laundry right around the corner from the fish market. I can't remember what the laundry was called, but it was a great big laundry there for many, many years.
Where it was a cleaners or they had washing machines?
No, they took in laundry from various restaurants and places, you know, and it was a huge laundry. Uh-huh. I don't know what it is now. It's on the... oh gosh, what side of the street is it? But anyways, it's right around the corner from where Greenspan, Fish Market, the laundry.
So there was, right now we have a lot of restaurants. It sounds like there was a lot of industry there.
A lot of those restaurants were houses at one time, you know. They were, people lived in that. Mm-hmm. And people lived in these places. There wasn't so many. It was just at the sort of the corners. There was
the corners had stores.
Yeah, mm-hmm. And on Borden Street,
which is right here
in Harbor. That's where Grainer's Drugstore, which is now a restaurant, a very nice restaurant. A
Boulevard Cafe, probably, or maybe Shabby Shoe.
It's on the east side of the street.
Boulevard Cafe.
Okay, so that was was Grainer's Drugstore, and my husband, Ron, his brother, was a partner, in that drugstore. So, you know, that was a great drugstore, actually. Yeah, Ron and Alan Cashin had that with Lou Grainer. Lou Grainer, by the way, was the most wonderful guy, really wonderful man.
And he was one of the owners of the drugstore.
Yes.
Where Boulevard Cafe is now.
Yeah, yeah. And what other places? I mean, on our street, it really was the Petrov family. He was a plumber. He lived across the road in the Rosen family. And next, two doors away from us, was the Lieberman family. And these are people in the Charndorf family. I was very good friends. You know,
what you're saying, I think, is you knew the family.
Oh, yes, very well.
The families knew the children. The children knew the parents.
Absolutely. It was, everyone was sort of interconnected. You know, we all talked to one another and said hello. And I knew the children and the...
Was the Narai for show there at the time?
Yeah, well, it was a synagogue. It was a very Orthodox synagogue. Little tiny Orthodox synagogue. And my parents were not religious at all, you know. They never went. I was the only one that went to shul. Only because I liked going to shul. I loved
it. And which shul? Is that the one you went to?
Yeah, I did.
Did the men and the women sit separately?
Separately, yes, yeah. But I always liked going to shul. So I was the only one in the family that went to shul. Sounds strange, but...
Sounds like you were the rebel.
I didn't... My mother never sent me to classes, Hebrew or Yiddish or whatever. But it was just something that I really enjoyed.
It felt good.
Yes, it felt good. Exactly. And I don't know if you know, the Goldsteins lived on our street, which was... Hyann Zells used to be a big drugstore, Zella Goldstein. So they just lived up our street too. And
where was their drugstore?
Oh, they didn't have a drugstore. Now they, like later in life, he acquired these Hyann Zells drugstores.
Uh-huh.
But they lived on our street. Uh-huh. I should talk about my grandmother who lived on Russell Street, right across from Lansdowne Public School.
Please do.
And I used to visit her and my aunt, because it was an extended family. So there was my aunt and two uncles and my grandparents. And, you know, I would visit them every day, not only going to Lansdowne Public School, but I also used to go down from Brunswick to visit them. And then I walked down further on Robert Street, go cut through one of the lanes and visit my auntie on Major Street. My auntie, oh my God, what's that?
Anyway, but you had family.
Yes, all around that, yes.
So you'd go by yourself with one of your siblings?
No, I'd go by myself or take my bike and I would go down and visit them always, you know. I was very close with my aunt, especially my auntie Jenny. On Russell, 44 Russell Street. She was wonderful because my mother had polio.
Oh.
So she took the three of us in with all the uncles and my grandparents.
You all lived together your mother had polio?
Exactly. Yeah, she took the kids in.
Was it quite crowded when you lived with your aunt at that time?
It was wonderful. I mean, we just loved it. I mean, she was a wonderful cook and a wonderful person. And, you know, she was happy and fun. And, you know,
was this your mother's sister?
My mother's sister.
Your mother's sister. Yeah. So she took the three children in. And your father? Or did he
stay
at
home? No.
He stayed at home,
yeah.
But there were other family members that lived with your aunt at that time?
Yeah, there was my two uncles that lived there at that time. Sydney, Shloimeh.
Yeah.
And Yucky, Jack. Jack never married, and Sid did get married. So we stayed with them, and she took care of us until my mother, she was in isolation, and, you know, she was... she came out of it well, but it took her a while until she got on her feet again.
You know? What could have been a really scary time for you was...
It was a good time.
Because your aunt...
She made sure that we were happy. You know, she would take us down to the Playhouse Theater, to the Garden Theater, to see films, you know. She'd schlep us everywhere. She was just a wonderful person. Plus, she was taking care of my elderly grandparents. Plus, she was working even. I mean, she was really quite remarkable, you know. She really was. So, and she was a wonderful cook. She's the loveliest person. Mm. My grandmother was from England, and so was my aunt. So they had this English accent, you know, and very not religious, but they kept kosher, which was really interesting, you know. And they did all, you know, wonderful cooking. They had a big stove. And, you know, with the coals, they put the coals in the, you know, wood-burning stove. Yes. That's where she did her cooking. So it's really neat.
So I think your grandparents and your aunt might have been different from a lot of others whose accents were Eastern European and yours were British accents.
And my grandmother was she was a character, a real character. So she would sing me these raunchy songs from London, you know, because she was a Londoner and she was probably in the whatever section she was from. I mean, she was such a character, you know, and I used to have to take her to bingo games. So I'd walk her to wherever the bingo games were in the area. And I said, you know, Grandma, I really don't like being with you because you're too old. I'm embarrassed.
Could she see any humor in that?
No.
I guess we wouldn't like it if our grandchildren said that to us right now.
Yeah, she was really quite a character. But,
one of the things you're saying to me is you talked about, you named all these neighbors.
Yeah.
And then you named your aunts and your grandparents.
Yeah, yeah.
And so you had family and community and you felt comfortable and easy about being with all of these people right in this, what we now call Harvard Village.
It was lots of fun. First of all, I was a tomboy, so I didn't have any, quote, girlfriends. No one would play with me. Only the boys would play with me because I was real rough and tumble. So when I finally acquired my girlfriend, Ruth Hannick, it's Ruthie, her mom passed away, and so she went to live with her grandmother right across the road from me. She's the sweetest person, and she became my dearest friend, and she still is my dearest friend.
So she accepted you with your tomboy traits.
She loved me. She says, because you were such a character. And she taught me how to dress, you know, to wear clothes. I had no concept of clothes or whatever looked awful. She took off my nylon balled up sweater and said, you can't wear that anymore. Let's get you something to wear.
It could be that if your mother had said that to you, you would have rejected it, but coming from your girlfriend, you might have accepted it more easily.
Well, not even, no, my mom was really kind and everything. We didn't have any confrontations. Mm-hmm. No, not at all. She was a wonderful mother, but she wasn't a fashionable person.
Yeah, yeah.
Not at all.
So your friend Ruthie helped you.
Oh, yes. She helped me with that. Yeah. I had no idea. None whatsoever. So that's really interesting.
But you enjoyed being a tomboy and being strong and athletic.
I was very, very much, you know, maybe overtly so, because I would, you know, it was pretty rough, you know. I would hit someone very easy if they were going to disturb me in any which way. My dukes were up, so to speak.
You're talking about yourself as a child and how you loved more aggressive activity.
Yes.
Please talk to me about where you played and the kind of things you played as a child in your... Well, during your childhood, into your adolescence.
Oh, hide and go seek, you know, we play hide and go seek. And, you know, we play, you know, like cops, you know, bad guy, good guy, that sort of thing. And it was, as I said, I was the only gal, you know, doing this. And it wasn't just passive, it was very aggressive stuff, you know. And I used to love riding my bike, so I would go down to Lansdowne Public School, especially during the summer, and I'd ride my bike and drive everyone crazy there during that summer school session, you know. And they would say, Marion, slow down, you know. I had a lot of issues only because, but when my mother had polio, I was sent to an open-air school. You probably don't know anything about
please.
It.
Say it more slowly. What is it?
Ord Open Air. Ord's public school, but they had an open-air concept on the upper level. And kids that were undernourished and had a lot of issues, physically more, you know, health problems, they sort of wanted to restore their health back. So it was either Ord Open Air, or there was another open air, and I forget where it was, but this was closer to us. So I would take the streetcar, because there was a streetcar in Harvard Street, down to Ord Public School, which is the same school. It's still there. It's right by the hospital.
Where is it?
It's you know where Princess Margaret is?
Yes.
And there's a little street in the back?
Yes.
Well, that's, you see a...
there's a school there.
That's Ord Open. That's Ord. Ord's
okay,
Ord,
so it's south of college and west of university.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So I go there every day. I guess when it was about, I don't know what age I was, about maybe 9 or something like
but
that.
But you took the streetcar there.
Oh, yeah, myself. Yeah.
That's interesting because so many parents wouldn't allow that today.
I just did everything myself, you know. Yeah. I mean, and then we had to eat our breakfast and we had to sleep in the afternoon, eat our lunch there. And we stayed till about 4:30 and then went back home. So it did help me tremendously. You know, I sat down, I ate properly, I was forced into it almost. So that was interesting. That's what I was a rebel. There's no question about it. Maybe because I wasn't nourished enough or whatever it was, you know.
When you were playing with your friends as a child, where did you play?
We played up in the lane, in the back lanes. Uh-huh. That's mainly where we played, up the lanes. And as I got a little older, I met some girls up the street. There was Dreza and, I forget, Ebi and Dreza. And they were girly girls. But they liked to play dress up, and we played movie stars. So we all became movie stars. And then we used to go up the lane again and find all kind of discarded clothes. Mm-hmm. And then we'd bring these clothes into, Dreza would put it underneath her porch or something. There was a little hiding place. And we'd pull them out and get dressed and became the actresses of the time, whatever it was, you know. I was Margaret O'Brien or whatever. I have no idea. So we used to, and they had a beautiful backyard. It was quite a very wealthy family, and we had a lovely time of it. It was really fun.
So the back lane was a significant fun place for you.
It was. Tremendous. There was lots of things always happening there.
But when you played with the boys, then you played with the girls, but that was also in the back lane.
Yeah, in the back lane. Okay. We used to collect things, and then we'd go into Dreza's backyard. But with the boys, it was hiding in little nooks and crannies, you know, or whatever we were playing. I used to even go down to, I met some kids at Ord Open Air, and they lived on Baldwin Street, and they used to play alleys.
Marbles.
And
in the winter or in the summer?
In the summer. So I'd go down there and play marbles with, because they didn't play marbles on Brunswick Street. They played it on Baldwin Street, you know, with, it was a whole group of people who, a bunch of Jewish boys that, I can't think of the name of it. Daters. The Dater Boys. That's right. Mm-hmm. And the Dater Boys played marbles. And one of the girls that I met in open air, she played as well, Sharon. And so we played marble. She was also a tough kid. But innocent, but tough, you know? Mm-hmm. Whatever was on my mind, I just verbalized it, you know, like nobody, I put everyone down if they're going to even attempt to put me down. Strange, I know.
Did your family use the market at all? Kensington Market?
Yeah, my grandmother and my aunt, they'd go down, you know, maybe Wednesday, Thursday, and they'd buy all the shopping for Shabbos. have their chicken slaughtered. Well, I remember them slaughtering the chicken. A few times I went with my auntie, and she was the one that really did all that. My mother, she never really schlepped down there. It was just too far away. It was too much for her. She would just, you know, buy things locally.
At all these corner stores.
The butcher, the fish store. Greenspan's or Margin, and, you know, whatever.
So your family used the corner stores.
Oh, for sure.
And the Harvard Street stores.
Yeah, for sure. For sure they did.
But your grandmother and aunt, who lived closer to college. Used Kensington Market.
They go to Kensington, yeah. And if my auntie, she would buy some stuff. She'd, Pearlie, I've got some stuff for you, you know, whatever. So my mother would go and pick it up, whatever. Or we would go down to get it. I would put it on my bicycle and bring it up, you know. Whatever.
You talked about using public transportation at 9 years old.
What
do you remember about public transportation in this neighborhood? What existed on Harvard?
Harvard Street was the streetcar, and then we took a transfer, and I forget where I transferred. Oh my God! And I you know, I can't even
Maybe
remember.
Spadina.
Yeah, Spadina, and then I went down to college, and then either walked over to when I went to Ordo Public. And I remember once my brother and I were fighting or whatever, and he hit his. He hit me on the back of my head, broke his fingers. So my mother said, take him. You did the job. You take him to the sick kids' hospital.
So you took your brother to the hospital. To mend his hand that had whacked you in the back of your head.
Exactly. So, you know, it's like you just do. You went wherever you wanted to go. You either was the bicycle or you went. And then we'd always go to the films up on Bloor Street, up on Bloor, yes, the Midtown.
Is that where the Bloor Cinema is?
Yes, yes, the Midtown and the Bloor Cinema. It was called the Bloor, now it's, I don't know, some
now. Oh, so what were the, there were a number of theaters there at the time?
Three theaters.
Well, okay.
The Bloor, the Midtown, and there was another one, and I can't think of it.
But they were all near Bathurst?
Yeah, they were right, yeah. Yeah, all in that area. We always went on Saturday, and when we were with my auntie when we were ill, when my mother was ill, she used to take us down to the College Street, to the gardens, and the playhouse. They were theaters.
Okay.
Yeah, movie theaters, and they, you know, that's was our real treat, was going to.
So those. There were two theaters.
Two theaters.
There were three on Bloor between. Yeah. Bathurst and Spadina, and two on College.
Yeah, two is from what I recall, you know.
So that's a lot of theaters in this.
Yeah, there was. And they were used. I mean, there was tons of children that went. We had a, you know, line up to go. It was wonderful. Yeah, that was fun. I enjoyed that. You were in a fantasy world. Definitely a fantasy world, you know.
Now your father, of course, supported the family by repairing cars.
Yeah.
What do you remember about people having cars? What percentage of your neighbors or friends had cars?
Not too many. We were about the only ones, you know, because I don't recall anyone other than, you know, kids that I met. I finally went to camp, and then a lot of the kids were. Came from wealthier families, obviously, and they live further north.
But in this neighborhood?
No, I don't recall too many cars, for sure. Mm-hmm.
So this neighborhood, people used what was available?
They walked.
Public transportation.
I really don't. Because I know the cars that my father worked on were all very good cars, expensive cars.
So they came
cars.
From farther north?
Yes, for sure, yeah. There was no clunkers there, in other words, you know. Not too many people. Other than my father, he always had a car. Mm-hmm. Maybe one of my uncles had a car, you know. But not too many.
Your family used the corner stores a lot.
Yes.
Do you recall anything being delivered during your childhood?
Yes.
What was
I think my mother got the chicken man would come with his, you know, brought chickens fresh from a farm, you know.
They were already killed.
Yeah, for sure. Because my mother wouldn't go near tenenbaums.
So she wanted them. Did she still have to pluck the feathers, or had that also?
No, I think it was they were dressed already. No, she wouldn't do that. And then I don't think anything else was delivered. I don't recall anything other than
chickens.
Just chickens.
What about heating of your home? Do you remember anything about that?
My mother didn't have. See, we had coal for a while, and then they switched to oil. Definitely, they had coal.
So that must have been quite a transition to get rid of those big coal bins.
Yeah, because I recall my husband, who lived on Brunswick, North Brunswick, they had coal, and his grandmother lived two doors away, my husband's grandmother. And she would give him money to get the coal delivered, and he would sort of handle anything, any transactions for her. Mm-hmm. So that's interesting, yeah. But we did have coal for a while, and then it switched over definitely to an oil. I remember them putting it in, because then my parents extended the basement. They sort of dug it out and had it dug out.
So that was under the garage?
Yeah, it was. No, I'm talking about our house, the house.
When you stopped living above the garage, right?
The garage, I don't. Truly, I don't even know how it was heated, quite frankly. It was, pretty flimsy place, It wasn't, it was awful.
Do you know what year that was taken down? And that was taken down and then the park replaced it? Or was there something there in between?
I think my father sold it as a garage to someone else. And then after that, they removed it. I think that's how it worked.
I have no idea about dates because long as I've been in the neighborhood,
you've always seen the park.
It's about 25 years now. It's been a park.
No, it definitely was sold to another garage mechanic, and then we don't. My parents then moved to Florida. It was really nice. They moved to Florida, and I helped them get established there and whatever. So that was really neat. But they didn't lived in the Gulf side, and it wasn't a Jewish community or anything like that. So it was bad for my mom, good for my father. But okay, it's fine.
When you look at the neighborhood now,
you
were here a long time ago.
Yeah.
Are there some changes that jump out at you?
Well, the tenenbaums. I mean, they built this beautiful place. I think they sold it for over $1 million, $1.3 million or something.
Which place is that?
This is Tenenbaums, the poultry that my mother had. This, because they had a storefront, and then they had an apartment above, and then they were going to build this slaughterhouse in the back. So it was a large property. It's beautiful. I couldn't believe it. I was shocked. And several of the little cottages, sort of pushback cottages. I don't even know who lived in them. They were sort of nondescript. Yeah, they're all lovely. They've not only renovated them, but tore some of them down and sort of put them back up again. And they're stunning. Some of the better homes, like the Petrov home, it was a nice brick house, and the Rosen home, they just, fixed them up a bit, and they're pretty well the same house, but a lot of them have been changed, and, gentrified, and lovelified, and whatever.
Lovelified.
Whatever.
Now, you said you went to this special school for some years.
Yeah.
What other schools did you go to while you were living here?
I went to Central Commerce. And I unfortunately went to Central Commerce because I was told there, you really should, you have so much ability in the arts, you should go on to, Ryerson wasn't a university at either Ryerson or Ontario College, and I just wanted to graduate and get a job because I really needed the money. I wanted to make my own money and, because I always had a job. I always worked, I worked at Kresge's at that time on St. Clair, and they put me in the flower department to make centerpieces, and it seemed I always had this creative bent. And I, at the Y, at the Jewish Y, I used to teach kids art, you know, painting. And
were you in your 20s at that time, or younger than that?
No, younger, way younger.
Like at 16 you were teaching?
Yeah, I was there.
At the Y, at the Lawrence Spadina.
Yeah, and because I also, I became a counselor at Northland B'nai B'rith. First it was B'nai B'rith, and then we amalgamated Northland B'nai B'rith. So I was a camper, a CIT, and a counselor, and then a section head, you know. So I loved camp. Camp changed me. It gave me a direction. I found out who I really was at camp. I loved camp. You know, that was my nature and the freedom of everything and being away from the city and whatever. It was wonderful. It was the best time at camp.
That's wonderful.
Yeah.
Let's come back to the why. You taught art there, and you started at a young age.
Yes.
Teaching. Did you do anything else at the Y? Did your family or you use it in any other way?
No, I think I was the only one that used it, quite frankly. We'd swim. They used to have a pool up above on the top floor.
The Y?
The Y, on Spadina. Yeah, there was a swimming pool. I know it sounds crazy, but they did. And we all used to meet up there. And we used to use the facilities, not necessarily for exercise, because that I didn't really. But it was, they had dances.
So it was a social place.
More social than anything else.
Did your sister and brother use it too, for social things?
Not really. Mm-hmm. Not so much. I don't recall my brother. He left home at 18, so, he sort of traveled the world, quite frankly. A very interesting person, for sure, my brother. My sister was quite younger than me, so I don't know what she did, But the Y, it was social.
So it was swimming for you and social.
Yeah, and it was also, there was the Young Jadea on
They Harvard. Rented some space there, you mean?
Yeah, no, the Young Jadea was up the street on Spadina, near Harvard. It was also a social thing. And that's about it, But I love being at the Y and being able to sort of be with little kids and teach them art and mural. We did a lot of murals, and I don't know how I got involved, but I got involved with it.
But also to be teaching, you were doing that at a young age.
Yeah,
too.
Very young age. Yeah.
Yeah, but it's clear that you loved art.
And
you were talented.
I went on afterwards. I went back to school and, I became a potter sculptor, and I had many, many gallery shows. Yeah, and I did.
Yeah. So in that respect, you and your father were similar.
Very.
You were
my father, absolutely. Very
and
mechanical.
Creative, yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Just creating everything, yeah, for sure. Yeah.
Did you have a backyard behind your
yes,
home?
Yes, my mother, she had a wonderful garden there. Uh-huh. And we had an old rickety, garage, but we didn't use it. It was just sort of storage, And, it was narrow home, so you couldn't really play, It was mainly a garden, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. I mean, an edible garden, So it was wonderful because, she had cherry tree and peach tree and all kinds of,
So you could eat that stuff as fresh as...
Oh, it's terrific.
Pull it out of the ground or off the tree.
Absolutely.
And wash it and eat it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We did, absolutely. Yeah.
What about the safety of the neighborhood?
I don't think there was any real issues, other than if there was, we lived there... if there was some cars parked, cars would drive up if they drove up fast. And I used to skate on the roller skate, a lot on the street. All of us played, roller skate. So that was the only danger, is that, the kids were running on the streets because we just didn't care, It wasn't like, don't go near the street, Yeah, so that was dangerous, actually, but... Whatever.
you're here to tell the tale.
Yeah.
did Did your mother ever work out of the home, or did she work at home in any way? I mean, I don't mean the homemaking.
No, any elections, she worked on the elections, you know, like she would, what is it, when they, you go and you take people's names or whatever it was, you know, to post them. Yes, she did that, for sure.
Did any of your friends' mothers work either out of the house or at home, kind of cottage industries?
Not that I'm aware of. My aunt did. She worked in a chocolate factory, Jenny Lynn's Chocolate Factory. Whatever she did there, she was one of the only people. I'm telling you, most women stayed at home. Mrs. Charnoff, who was wonderful, a very intelligent lady, but she was a homebody. But she did a lot of stuff. You know? Oh no!
What I want to ask you about now is, you lived here during your adolescence. What? Talk to me, please, about dating at that time.
Well. I was 16 years old and never gone out on a date, and I wasn't even interested in boys, quite frankly, you know. But I used to ride my bicycle, and when Ron, my husband, he lived up in Brunswick, and he'd go down to the Y on Brunswick Street, right? Because he went to the Tomatora there and whatever. And so I said, hey, Ron, you know, and I'd ride my bike and he'd be walking with his bag, you know. And I said, I have to go to the Sweet 16 party. I don't know who to ask because I never went out. So I asked Ron, well, you know, he'll tell you stories if you speak to him. I did this one gal I didn't like, so I put down a piece of cake on the chair. So she was, you know, I was just.
She sat on the piece of cake.
Yeah, I was just. I was not nice. However, he was so intrigued, I think, with me, because we always sort of kept in touch with one another, you know, 16, and then I would go out. Then I started to go out with a lot of the guys from Phi DE, which was the medical thing. I don't know. I sort of.
Fraternity?
Yeah, fraternity, you know. They were all in medicine. They were a little older. I don't know how this. I think it came about through when I was at some camp. Mm-hmm. The sister, the whatever, you know. And so I went out with a lot of medical guys, a lot of dentists, you know, that sort of thing. But I really didn't. Like I liked Ron because he was such a nice guy. He was such a sweet man.
So you knew him when you were 16?
16, yeah.
And now you're 77 and you're married to him.
And we're still married.
How old were you when you married him?
I was 21. He was 22.
You've been married a long time.
Yeah, a long time. Yeah. But he's a great guy. He's the sweetest guy, you know.
But you knew it at 16 years old that he was terrific.
I knew it because he was such a nice guy.
And you were right.
I was. He was a wonderful guy.
And you dated other people?
I did. I dated, you know, just nothing serious. Mm-hmm. I just didn't feel comfortable with the others. And I just like Ron.
What were your friends doing? Say when you were 16, 17, 18, mm-hmm. what was the dating at the time?
You know, I didn't have that many girlfriends. As I told you mm-hmm. before, I really didn't. I don't think they, you know, I don't think people really indulged. They went to a lot of dances, you know, the Y dances, the Habanim dances,
So it was going as a group of guys and a group of girls and you met there.
Yeah. Uh-huh. I never really went out. I don't know why, but it didn't happen at that time. I don't remember people going out with tons of guys, mm-hmm. you know. Mm-hmm. Not really, you know. Sort of fixated on one person. And,
well, I guess that was more the style that this group met that group mm-hmm. and you had some social event like at the Y.
Yeah, Y uh-huh. and whatever was happening. There was school dances, like Harbor had dances, and even Central Commerce had dances, you know. It was different, you know.
Oh, it was very different from
entirely
what it is today.
It was very innocent. Yeah. I must say, very innocent, you know. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
I think we're coming to the end of our time.
Yeah, sure.
But I know that when you came in with some notes because you had given some thought to our conversation. Would you just take a look at your notes? What have we not talked about?
I think I just mentioned just about everything, quite frankly. You know, there's nothing other than what I've told you, quite frankly. It was a different lifestyle completely, you know, that you, like my grandchildren and I'm sure your grandchildren realize now, it's just entirely different. It's a different life. Mm-hmm. It was very simplistic. Even people that went on to university, perhaps some of my friends that I met later on in life, they had this sort of lifestyle, but then when they went on to university, it was maybe their dating was, they met different people at university, so they went on more dates, quote. But I didn't have that opportunity, because right after school I went directly to work, and I was just busy working and trying to make some money and whatever.
And what are, if I was to ask you, which I'm asking you, what are some of your strongest memories, thoughts, and feelings about this neighborhood that was in the 40s and the 50s?
Well, I just love the fact that I would go down to my grandmother and grandfather and my auntie. I would, like, my cousin Cecile was living with them as well. And that was so warm, and it was so much fun. It was like, you know, we just don't have it now. You know, it was very important, you know, that
the family being close physically.
I mean, I had my appendix out, and the first thing I wanted to see my Auntie Jean. I wanted to go to Grandma's. I don't want to be here. And, you know, it shows you how I really felt very attached there, you know.
So you had them emotionally and physically. You were all one small community, close-knit.
Yes, for sure. Yeah. They especially, you know. Yeah. And that's, my auntie was so wonderful to us. Yeah. My cousin Cecile, who's had a hard life, she's really didn't amount to too much, and I've always helped her. She's lived in New York for a while now. She lives in Toronto, and she has a tremendous amount of issues, and I make a point, and my friends always say to me, you are so good to her. No one in the world would do what you do. I said, but you don't know how good my Auntie Jean was.
So you learned very beautiful things, and you're practicing that yourself.
Exactly.
So, and especially you talked about when your mother was so sick, and your aunt took care of the three children, and you're doing this for Cecile.
Yes.
Yeah. So you.
I do.
Yeah.
But she's a wonderful person. Don't get me wrong. Yeah, you know, she just has issues.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
so she's lucky to have you, kind and generous.
Yeah, but no, it's okay because. You know, she's in her own way. She's a good person.
Yeah. So she's had a hard life.
Yeah.
And you're making it easier in ways that you can.
I try. Yeah. And I really feel very strongly about that. And you know, a lot of my friends have said, you know, she's put you through a lot of grief, Marion. But I said, I don't care. It's not important. Yeah. You know, she's a good person. She just can't help it. That's it. Yeah. Period.
So you're kind to her. Mm-hmm. But you also learned that kind of kindness from this family that you felt so close to.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, for sure. Yeah. You know, even my uncle, when I was set up in my studio, I had another life. I designed rugs and fabricated rugs, and my uncle, who was a furrier, came over and brought me all his like big cutting tools, and couldn't, you know, he was in awe of all the things that I was doing. So. Well, they all helped me in their own. When I got established in my own way, my father helped me set up my studio when I was a potter, and you know, my uncle helped me with some tools, and so that's very nice, you know.
Good family.
Yes,
and that's why you're practicing the same with Cecile.
I think so. Yeah. Yeah. Well, yeah. Cecile is special. Yeah. She really is. Yeah.
Well, and so are you. So I'm going to say, Marion Cashin, thank you very much. It's been a pleasure. And you shared very colorful stories with me today.
Well, thank you. No, yeah. It was fun. It was interesting.